Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Meet Seamus. He and his wife are driving in their new Citroën C5 Aircross SUV to her birthday dinner, which he forgot in a restaurant that she had to book. She married a cliché. This could be a very uncomfortable drive. Except the Citroën C5 Aircross SUV comes with advanced comfort seating and progressive hydraulic cushion suspension, making it a very comfortable drive indeed. Citroën. Engineered for comfort. See citroen.ie.
Welcome to the Dope Black Dads podcast, a place where we are changing the narrative and having progressive conversations about black fathers, as well as creating a safe digital space for the community.
Good morning, everybody. Here at Dope Black Dads, we love to share a platform with black people, especially dads who are paving it forward and creating a space for our stories to be told. Today, we are joined by Okezie Morrow. He's an actor. He's also created Tata Storytime, which is a platform where black actors tell black stories for kids. We're also joined by fellow Dope Black Dads, Stephen Ishmael, and the famous Umar Kankia. How is everyone today?
Yeah, all good.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me, guys. It's an absolute honor to be here.
How are you doing, Stephen?
I'm good.
Good, good. Okezie, have I said your name properly, first and foremost?
That's great. Yeah, Okezie is great.
Okezie, okay, right.
That's if you want to go to the village, that's the proper village pronunciation from your belly. Okezie, But, you know, if you say, you know, Okezie, you know, it's fine. Okezie, most people call me Okezie anyway. But for me, I really wanted to actually emphasize that, you know, how my name is actually pronounced, especially on the show with the kids, because a lot of kids, you know, I remember when I was at school, you know, you're teased for your name, you know, how your name sounds. And actually there was a teacher in school who was Nigerian. He just rocked up one day and he said my name properly. He said, Okezie, and my friends were like, they started laughing. I was like, what? And I was, you know, it's one of those things. But, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, actually he's pronouncing my name correctly. But I'm getting teased for it, you know, which doesn't make sense. But like, so for me, it's one of those things. It's like, it's important, actually, kids understand how their names are supposed to be pronounced. And my name, you know, my name has a meaning. I'm sure a lot of us with African names have, their names have particular meanings. And it's important that it's said in a proper way and they don't be embarrassed by that.
Mm-hmm. What does Okezie, what does it mean?
Okezie means well created or created well. I don't think most people that meet me, I don't think they would dispute that, Abby.
So I wanted to get into Tata Storytime and you, everything that you do. How do you introduce yourself to people and what makes you a Dope Black Dad?
Well, I mean, if people want to give me that title, that's great. I'm just doing what I do, really. You know, for me, so in terms of Tata Storytime, it was born about because my daughter at the time, she was one, and I was looking at, you know, we were watching programs and stuff on TV, and you want stuff that's gonna stimulate them, but you know, and you know, not be too much at that age. But I like the idea of books. I always liked books. And some of the shows that we see with people reading stories to children, I was like, this is all cool, but where are the black storytellers and where are the black stories? You know, because I knew they were out there, but they weren't being pushed forward into a visual medium on that kind of level. So that's where the idea came from, really, because I was like, well, nothing like this has been done. And why, you know? So I just went about my ignorant self and just created it and just, you know, see what happens, and the rest is history, you know?
No, it's amazing. I mean, quite interesting. Tata in where I come from in Cameroon actually means auntie.
Okay. It's interesting. Somebody else said that Tata means grandparent or grandma or something like that. It's really interesting. But to where I come from, which is where the name was inspired from, Tata means it's an affectionate name for a small child. We say, oh, Ibu Tata, you know, it's just like a little, it's like, oh, you're, you know, a sweet child, you know, small child. Yeah. And it's like an affectionate name for it. And that's kind of why I chose it. And also because it's easy. It rolls off the tongue easily as well. So that was where the inspiration comes from.
Umar. Where does your name come from? I mean, how are you? How are the children? And have they watched Tata Story Time? Did they watch? Careful, we've got a guest that actually produced Tata Story Time.
So. Yes.
Yes.
Give me the right answer, Zuma.
No pressure. So my name, so I'm Muslim in terms of like my religion. So my first name, Umar, has Arab connotations here. Kankia, I'm Nigerian by heritage, Hausa in the north. So that's kind of where it comes from. I don't actually know the meaning of my surname, which is bad, and I need to find this out actually. I need to speak to my parents about that one. But yeah, we have watched Tata Storytime. Femi the Fox is a particular favorite.
Right answer again.
In the household. We've got, because I remember buying the book for my daughter a few years ago when it first came out, and kind of reading it to her, and then kind of being able to display that and show it to her and my son now, because she's 5 and he's 2. So being able to have that visual element to it. And like you were saying, Akezia, I think it's so important that we have that kind of visual representation, because very often, you know, obviously CBeebies is the big thing for kids of that age. And
didn't want to mention them, but go on.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm joking.
No, but I think it's important that, especially in this day and age, that we are exposing our kids to people that look like them, that sound like them, stories that they can relate to. And I think, you know, what you're doing is amazing. And I think it gives that massive platform to be able to reach out to a much wider audience and not just be kind of restricted to just what you see on TV, but actually we've got access to it. And, you know, I think my kids absolutely love it.
Yeah, thank you, man.
What about you, Stephen? I mean, your kids are slightly older, and I think it's the second or third time you've been on our podcast, actually.
Yeah.
What about you? Have you heard of Tata Storytime? Have you heard the buzz around it? Have your kids?
I've heard about it, and I would signpost maybe if and when I'm in school to the infants or parents that ask me black stories or storytellers in that way. Obviously, my daughter's secondary school age, so she doesn't watch those kind of programs anymore. But I think there's space for us now to make sure our kids, you know, see us represented in those kind of places. You know, it's really important that they have people that look like them.
No, definitely.
Cool. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about Tata Storytime, and I'm aware that some of our listeners probably have no idea what it is. So why don't we let the creator of Tata Storytime actually tell us, okay.
Yes.
What was the inspiration for creating Tata? What is it? And how did you get all those people to get on and just read those stories? And why haven't I been invited?
Well, look, Tata Storytime is... basically, it's very simple, very simple. It's just one person reading a story to the camera. And we intercut that with pictures of the books itself. So that they are picture books. So the age group is I would say around between 2 to 8. Although we have had, you know, 1-year-olds love it apparently, and 10-year-olds, some 10-year-olds love it. You know, and actually some adults have had messages from adults. Yeah, well, people that have said that they don't even have kids, but they watch it, and I think it's a kind of nostalgia there, because it's that thing of, oh, this would have been dope if when I was a kid, you know, I wish I had this when I was a child, you know, and they can kind of sit in that for a bit. And so, but you know, the difference with us is, I guess my background is acting. I'm an actor, and with that, I'm connected obviously to a lot of amazing actors. And the thing is, actors or people, you know, storytellers, we find ways of you know, bringing you into the story, really pulling you into the story, and keeping it entertaining, and you know, and it's also a nice way to educate the kids without them realizing they're being educated. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's there is something about that. If you find a good story and you have a good storyteller, that combination is brilliant, you know, and you can just pull a child into a world, just take them away for 5 minutes from the real world and just pull them into that story. And it can be magical and beautiful and fun. And you know, and so that's where I think our show is special, because you know, because anybody can read a story. But it, you know, it's a special skill to be able to just pull that, you know, pull your audience in and just get them to engage and really enjoy the story how it's meant to be enjoyed. So that's kind of what it is. I think is that a good enough explanation for you?
Yeah, no, I think it is, because I think even as adults, I watch Tartar Storytime, and at times I've tried to replicate Julian's laugh on Tartar.
Lucien's laugh.
Yes. Lucien's laugh. And yeah. The kids have just kind of gone, no, daddy, you can't do it. They can't do it. And they've gone up to watch the video of you trying to replicate it as well. And I felt kind of like, yeah, that's fine. I'm not the only one who can't do Lucien's laugh.
Yes, we did a little silly thing when I tried to replicate Lucien's laugh. And Lucien Msamati, who is an incredible actor, by the way, one of the best I've worked with. And when I say, I don't say it lightly, you know, when people say about the talent that we have, we really have some of the best talent. Like, I'm not talking about black actors. I'm talking about actors, full stop. I'm talking about actors in the world. Just go and look at Lucien Msamati. Look at his CV. Look at what he's doing. Mm. Look at some of the shows he's been in, you know, and you see what I'm talking about. Mm. So to be able to get these kind of people to come and tell stories for kids is incredible, because it rarely happens like that. Do you know what I mean? And that's what needs to be happening more of. So, but I did try to replicate his laugh, and I failed miserably also. And it was hilarity ensued. So it was a nice little, touch that we did after shooting the series.
Yeah, I, like you said, you have some fantastic actors on there. And I want to go back to the inspiration for Tartar Storytime. You mentioned that your daughter was behind the inspiration for creating Tartar Storytime. Now, tell me a little bit more about that, and about that whole process, about how you dug that out to be able to create that for her, and how you came to that.
Yeah, well, in terms of the light bulb moment, like I said, when once you get that light bulb moment, you have this idea. This is, you know, a lot of us, especially creatives, we always get ideas and things come, and we're like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to write this play, or I'm going to write this film. And you might, you know, you try and write a bit, you get a few pages down, you're like, oh, okay, I put it down. 2 years later, you haven't done anything, you know. And this one was different, because I think it was, it's just something about a child, isn't it? When you've got a kid and you have something, and you're inspired by them for something, to create something. And I think this one was like that, because once I'd started my investigations and started my research on books and all these things, it's like I got up every day and I had to continue, you know, I just had to keep doing it. And even when it got really hard, I just had to keep doing it. Because I kept, you know, I, like there was times I would go to publishers and publishers rejected, you know, my, you know, what I was asking them of them. You know, it was just like something simple, just simple, basically just saying, look, I've got this format, I've got this idea, you know, I want to put it out. You know, I don't know where it's going to go. It could be on YouTube, but we're going to approach networks as well. So we don't know where it's going to end up, but it's a great idea. And they would agree with me. They'd be like, yeah, yeah, this is fantastic. But you know what? You go away, you do it, and come back to us when you've done it. And for me, I'm like, that's not how it should work. Because if you really believe in something that someone's trying to do, you should try and help them. Mm. And also, the thing is, once if my idea was going to be successful, they would also benefit because they would get more book sales, which is happening now with some of the authors that we have on there. And out of the 10 books, we have 7 that are independently published, and only 3 I got from a publishing house, which is called Lantana, and they're brilliant because they champion diversity. But you know, all the other big ones I approached didn't want to help me. I'm sure season 2 would be very different. But you see that these were some of the struggles I had to go through. So the process was a long one. It's a long one, you know, as you say, contacting authors, reading books, researching all these things, and you know, and then obviously putting a team together to do the shoot, and then getting my actors. And the actors are always the last piece of the puzzle. You know, okay. My wife was saying to me, we're getting quite close to shoot day, like a month away. She's like, have you contacted any of the actors yet? I was like, don't worry, they will come. Because, you know, because I know actors, and I know this, especially this kind of project, it's a passion project, and they know how important it is for us, for our community, and you know, for us. So I knew when I called on certain people, they would come through. So I wasn't worried about that. It's all the other stuff I was worried about.
that's amazing. I mean, it is crazy how much our children inspire us to actually to do some of the kind of to move the world for us. And I want to find out from you, Umar and Stephen, what have your children inspired you to do? And what have they? How have they inspired you to be better people? I mean, Okezie has done Tata Storytime, Umar, for example. What have you done and that your children have inspired you to do?
I think it's to get my fitness levels up. Because I think for a long, long time, you know, I'd be lazy. And I think, you know, my wife would often say, like, I'd kind of start something, but then not be consistent with it. And then kind of just be always looking for excuses not to do something, or, you know, blaming external forces, but not really looking at myself. But, you know, with my kids, it's like you're looking at them, you're running around, and you're like, you know what, I want to make sure that I'm here for the long haul, and not just kind of like, you know, and not struggling, and just being able to do things like going to the park and running around, playing football with my son, you know, all those kind of things. And it really just kind of kicked me into high gear earlier this year in terms of, you know, just wanting to make sure that I'm doing something with fitness and kind of being consistent with it and kind of making sure that I've got those energy levels and being able to kind of play with them and do that kind of stuff. Because I just don't, you know, I just don't want to be that dad that's just kind of like, okay, just sit on the sofa, kids are just jumping on you, which is fine, I don't mind that. But, you know, I want to be able to, and I loved it, especially this summer when we went away, you know, just being able to go to the beach and running around, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. So for me, that's definitely been the major inspiration for me, is kind of getting my fitness into high gear again.
Amazing. What about you, Stephen?
My daughter came up with the name of my company, going into schools, teaching mindfulness. So she kind of helped me develop the ways I would teach mindfulness to kids. She would kind of vet me in terms of language and how I delivered it. So she's been very instrumental in the work that I do.
That's fantastic. Amazing. I think for me is my children have just, I think, you know, when you're in that stage as a father, as a dad, where you're just in that rat race, where every day you're just you're just doing the things that you would normally do, but just doing it to what you think is your best. When I think of my children, it makes me just elevate to the next level, because I think this is what their norm is going to be. And if I know that their norm is my elevation, when they get to that and they have kids, their norm, their new norm will be their elevation. So they're always stepping it up a gear. So for me, it's always being seeing it as, you know, doing whatever I'm doing it to almost more than the best of my ability, because I want to show them that what you are doing is possible, but you just need to elevate when you're doing it for your children, and doing it not just for your children but for yourself. And you know, it's amazing how it actually makes you be a better person. I wanted to touch on the kind of the writers and the books that you kind of you got, you know.
Yeah.
Send Me the Fox. You had.
We got Who Do I See in the Mirror?
Who Do I See in the Mirror?
The two Riley books. Now Riley Knows He Can.
Yeah.
And Riley Can Be Anything.
What was your process towards picking those books? Because I think a lot of the time, these books are books that reflect self-importance, that reflect self-worth. What was your inspiration behind those particular books? Because now we have a plethora of children's books. Right.
Yeah. It's funny because last year, so I began researching and books and maybe from early 2019, so February, March last year, Femi the Fox was the very first book I wanted, because I think it came out the year before or so, or 2 years before. And there is a kind of a family connection with Jeanette Kwache, who wrote the book, who's our former Olympian. So I kind of had a link to her. And when actually she was the first person I called, because I love that book. I love that book. And I remember thinking back in that time, I was like, when the book first came out, because my daughter was very, very young. And naturally, as you're reading the book, this is the actor head, you know, kind of talking. I could see it as a cartoon or something. I was like, I can do the voices, you know, all those things. I was like, because it lends itself to that kind of the way of reading it, because you have all the different characters, you know, they're all personified. They're all like, they're all animals. So kids can relate to, there's something about animals that kids can just relate to. And obviously within that world, they're personified, aren't they? Because they're doing things that humans would do. So kids can pick up the messages. It seems like they can always, you know, it's a subtle way of giving these kids messages, but it's also a fun way, because, you know, he's silly and he makes silly mistakes. And I think, so for me, I was like, I've got to get this book. And I think when I called Jeanette, told her about the idea, and she was, you know, she was very supportive and like, yeah, go for it sort of thing. I think that gave me the confidence and, you know, and belief just to be like, right, I'm going to go out there and get more books. And actually, at that time, you're right, there's a lot more now, because I'm talking about just a year and a half. But just, you know, in a year and a half, it's grown so much, like the choice now, because there was a bit less choice then. But there was still choice. You know, there were still books out there. You know, go on Amazon or wherever you search, you'll find books. But for me, I also wanted the books to be great, because what I was trying to do, you know, when you're doing something like this, you don't want it to be mediocre. You know, you want to do it to be great, because why not? You know, we are great and we need to showcase ourselves in the best light, you know? So that starts from the books. That starts from picking the books. And I wanted to cover a variety of topics as well. I wanted to, the overall vision, as you can see with Tattoo Storytime, because in the end we had 10 books. So I wanted books that we could have an equal amount.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Of male and female. Readers, so you know, it was the kind of process. So it was trying to find books that lend themselves to that, but also the topics that they cover. For example, I don't think we didn't have any books about hair in this series, but like, for example, black hair is very important. You know, it's you know, but if I use the book or use a book on black hair, it's not just going to be, you know, an explanation about, like, you got to take me on a journey, take me on a story that, you know, let me, you know, if you can weave that, you see what I did there? If you can weave that, if you can weave that journey, you know, into a story, and then, oh, it just happens to be about the hair, then it's so much more interesting than if you just give me an explanation about hair, especially for young kids. So, you know, that was kind of the kind of process of trying to find just really beautiful books and beautiful stories. But within that, there's little things that educate the kids on culture, on history, on, you know, just little things without just bombarding them with stuff. You know, and I think that's really important. And that I would say this as well to any authors or any potential authors out there. You know, when it's good to write stories about these kind of things that are really important to us. But when you do that, just create the narrative, create a journey. You know, take us on this journey. With, you know, so that it's not just a set of instructions. That's what storytelling is about. And because by the time you come out of it, you're like, that was about that and that and that. Wow. You know, but you've really enjoyed learning about it. You've really enjoyed the journey.
I was just going to say, I mean, given the experiences now that you're kind of delivering through Tata Storytime, I mean, would you say that it's quite different to the experiences that you had about black representation growing up as a child versus, you know, what kind of things your daughter would now be experiencing?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Because, well, you know, we had, I think actually I'm a bit young for Jack and Nori, but I just about remember back in the day, it was a program called Jack and Nori.
Yeah, I remember that.
I think it finished just before my time, so you guys must be way older than me.
You insult your uncle.
Oh, sorry, sir. Uh-huh. So I think it was like, you know, those kind of programs were around those times. But again, there was no, I can't remember any like black stories or stories written by black authors. And, you know, even now in my house, we have loads of books by white authors. You know, we don't even think about it. It's just normal, right? It's like, but, you know, spot the black one, isn't it? And it's like, okay, why is it like that? Why does it have to be that way? So the same way we have had to go through the school system and go through, you know, all the system, reading books by authors from white backgrounds, you know, you can, why didn't we have some authors from our backgrounds as well? You know, because, you know, the narrative is written by, I suppose, by the, the people who control it, right? That sounds so silly, yeah. but you know, if the people who control it are white middle class males, then that's what you're going to get. Oh. If it's whether it's on TV, whether it's in school, the school system, so that is what you're going to get, and that's what we grew up with. So. Mm-hmm. Growing up as an adult, you always look back. I think when you're a kid, you don't really think too much about it, of course, because you know you're not burdened with that when you're a kid. It's when as you get older, and you look back on your childhood, and you think, oh, I didn't have that, I didn't have that, I missed out on that, you know, all these things. Even
is that
knowing
the moment,
our
then?
Own,
is that, sorry to try again, is that the moment then that I think most of us, and this applies to everyone on the pod, that is that the moment then that we all realise that, hold on, from books to TV to films, there is just no representation? And is that the moment that it became so important for us to have that representation? Or was it before then? Because when I think back to my childhood, I never thought for 1 minute, you know, like you said, watching Jack and Ori, watching Pengu, even, if any of you remember.
Pengu,
yeah.
Right, anyone classic. Remember, watching all of those, it was hilarious, to me, it was hilarious, watching penguins just go back and forth, but I never really thought about it. But when I look back on it now, I think, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog, all of that stuff, and Dragon Ball Z, it's now, oh, they're all coming back, but now, I look at it and I think, why didn't I even question it? Is that the moment when we become adults or become parents that we then realise that, hold on, there isn't enough representation. We need to represent our kids. You know.
Sorry to jump in, but I just think when you're a kid, you don't question, it's just normal. Mm. That's your life. That's how the world is. You don't really question that, you know. So for a child, it's only, for me anyway, I just think it's only when you get to that point, as you get a bit older and you start to look back, you're like, oh, you know, and that means that those formative years, you haven't had those gems, you know, those little things that just give you a sense of self, you know. Mm-hmm. You kind of been deprived of that.
I think as well, because I remember growing up in East London, being of Nigerian heritage. I remember this very, very vividly. I was about maybe 4 or 5, and I remember my parents, we were going to a party, they wanted me to dress in traditional clothing. And because of the way that Nigerians were mocked heavily, I was so upset, I was crying, I was like, I don't want to wear this, people are going to take the mick out of me, they're going to cuss me on road, blah, blah, blah. But then fast forward 15 years later, when you're at university, suddenly this massive explosion of kind of Afrobeats and everything, and you're kind of, everyone's embracing your culture, and you're like, hang on, why was I running away from that? You know, people are loving what we're doing, what we're about. And suddenly it's like, as you get older, you start to think, do you know what? I need to embrace who I am as a person. And I think that's what we're starting to see, especially I think now being a parent, I'm very much about trying to push that whole, yes, you were born here, yes, you're Brits and stuff, but Nigeria is at your heritage, especially for me, being married to a Yoruba woman, we've got that dual heritage as well in terms of teaching my kids about Hausa cultures and Yoruba cultures and kind of trying to mesh that together and kind of giving our kids that strong sense of identity. And I think it's so important that we are having more and more in terms of representation, and that being reflected, because that is the norm that we should be promoting for our children, not kind of, as I remember it, watching Power Rangers and the Black Ranger was actually a black man in there and kind of not making that connection. Mm-hmm. And then actually when you look back on it, you're like, that was racist. Mm-hmm. The Yellow Ranger was a Chinese woman or from Thailand or wherever she was from. And it's kind of like, that was racist. And you don't question it at that time when you're 6, 7, 8. But actually when you look back on it and you're reflecting, you're like, nah, that's wrong. And we can't be creating those narratives and those structures. And we need to kind of break that down and make sure that our experiences and our reflections and our cultures and our identities are reflected in the correct way so that our children can kind of run with that as well as they get older themselves.
Mm. What yeah. I mean, Stephen, you've got older kids. What was it like, and when was that moment that you thought, damn, This is where I realised that I've missed out and my kids are getting the best. Oh, I need to give my kids the best of what I missed out.
TV for me when I was growing up was completely white. The children's programs and especially like more adult programs, they were extremely racist. And we knew it from a very early age what they were, because it was just a mirror of what was happening in general society. You know, so to come to this point where there's more, but just not enough representation in TV and media, we definitely have to build our own tables, because we can't wait for these people to say, okay, we need to have more people of colour on TV or in films or writing books or on,
exactly.
You know, whatever it is.
See, exactly. See, what worries me is that people classify that as niche. That's what I don't understand. When you're telling black stories on TV and you're writing books, black stories, it's classified by publishers as a niche. But I failed to see that as a niche. I don't know if you've had the same experience, okay, yeah, when approaching these publishing houses or approaching TV company and how you get around this whole idea of how do you move past this issue? You know, in the creative industry, is it a problem to solve? Is it just a case of this is how it's going to be, and we just, like Stephen said, we just have to create our own tables? How do you navigate your way around this issue?
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, if you're talking about my background as an actor, is that's exactly the same thing, the same kind of thing where you are put in a box. You know, you are putting a niche. For quite early part of my career, I started about 2006, 2007, but came out of drama school 2009. And certainly for 6-7 years, it's all that sort of stuff. You're the black guy, you know. And, you know, if it's like on the script, it would say so-and-so rugged looking black man or whatever. Like, it would be specific on the script. If it doesn't say the color, it's a white guy, right? Wow. So it's like they had to specify the color of the character. But it changed a little bit for me in 2016 when I got the part in the TV show The Mist, which is a Stephen King adaptation. And I got, you know, series regular. It's a US TV show. And on the script in that one, it didn't say anything, but they auditioned me anyway. So I think that was a little kind of shift for me personally, but I think it showed at that time, it was only 4 years ago, that there is something that's just starting to shift or something that's starting to turn, but very slowly. Like ever so slowly, because a lot of this stuff is still going on and how they specify characters and, you know, and also the stereotypes of certain characters. So so for me, that was a breakthrough moment for me in terms of getting a part that actually on paper anyone could have played, but also there was, you know, when I actually played the part, because he was a soldier, but there's no stereotype. There's no broken home. There's no, you know, that there's no drugs, parents and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I was able to sort of fill in my own backstory and make him well-rounded and so on, you know, like a normal guy, you know, a human being like we are. And it's great to be able to do that, but it's rare that, you know, people, we're still fighting to be able to just play characters that are human and well-rounded, you know. So we're still fighting for that in certainly in the creative industry. And it's the same thing. So like you say, I've got to big up Tyler Perry. Someone like Tyler Perry, maybe whether you like his films or not, he said, you know what? I'm not going to do Hollywood. Hollywood don't want me. Fine, I have my base. I'm going to build on my base. Now, they could call his stuff niche if they want. But the man, I don't even know how much money he's worth. It's a lot of money. He's a billionaire, right? And that don't sound like niche to me. Right? if there's a huge market for it, and I think these people sometimes forget there's a black pound. Like, you know, people are craving for their stories. They're craving for their stories to be told because they don't see them. They don't see their stories, you know? So Tyler Perry serves a particular audience, and there's a lot of them, and they will pay for those stories to be told. And you know, big him up. He's doing his thing. He's built his own table, and he's still building. I heard he's building an airport, actually, right now. Yeah. Right now.
I suppose for me, but I mean, what are you working on next? I mean, what's the next stages for Ocasio and Tata Storytime?
For me personally or for Tata Storytime?
Both.
Okay. For Tata Storytime, the thing is, we did want to try and get it to a bigger platform. So we have approached some networks, just waiting for some answers. But like I say, if we can't wait forever for answers, we're going to push on and we're going to just do another series. But we have to find ways to raise the money, my brother, because the money came from my pocket the first time around. So we have to find a way to make money this time around and do it bigger, do it better. You know, I want more books next time around, actually, because we had 10 this time. If I can get 20, I want to do 20, you know, so we can like literally have almost half a year's worth of content to put out and just, you know, it's for the kids at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what, that's to come. I'm going to work on that, but I don't know when, but we're definitely going to do another series.
Wicked.
And for me, right now, as you said, my chauffeur is coming to pick me up in a second, and we're going to do. I'm doing a TV show at the moment. It's a US TV show, just a nice little part in it. I can't say too much, unfortunately, about it. But I think it will be a big show. Definitely be a big show. But I'm just in it. You know, I'm just there, but so I'm working on that till the end of October.
But by the way, we drop exclusives. Exclusives are dropped here, so feel free to say it and give us more.
Okay, I'll say it when if they don't sack me. I will definitely give you the exclusive once I'm allowed to say. But you know, it's a nice, I'm not a regular in it. I'm not in the whole thing, but you know, at the moment I'm just in one episode, but it's a nice bit, and I think it would be quite an interesting show. That's all I can say.
The Black Arrow. Stephen, did you have any questions for Ocasio?
Would you consider going into schools and storytelling?
Yes, of course. That's something to think about for a long-term thing, because I do want to establish Tata Storytime in that way as well. Even doing road shows, that's how I see it. I see it like eventually we can go on the road and do big shows and stuff, but we can also do little things in schools, and it doesn't have to be me that goes out necessarily. If I'm busy, I can, you know, be able to send people out and, you know, good actors, and just go on and tell these stories, you know, beautiful stories to the kids. And what's great is, like I say, it is about it's our stories, our heritage, but it's also great that kids that's not from our background can enjoy these stories and learn about our background, you know, without even knowing that's what they're doing, you know, but they'll know, I know what plantain is. Like, okay, you know, you've seen Femme de Fox. Oh, no, I know what a stew is. Of course I do, you know. That's what it's about, you know. So it's not alien to these kids, you know. And this is, they grow up with this stuff, you know, and they become adults. And something shifts. Something can shift when kids get to that age, 12, 13, 14, when they realize that, oh, you're a different color from me. Something can shift. It happened to me because when I was a kid growing up, I had white friends when I was younger, and then I ended up gravitating towards the black boys when I was like 13, 14. And the white friends gravitated towards their white friends as well. You know, there's something shifts there. And I think if we have a lot more of this stuff from a younger age, you'd get less of that. You get less of that shift, you know, because they both understand themselves from early, you know. Sorry, I know I'm going on. And just...
No, it's fine. we're now out of time. Look, it's clear that we as a community, we need these stories to be told. We need these stories, more and more of these stories to be told. And it's amazing that we have the likes of Akasia, Tyler Perry, creating these platforms as a community. We need to keep creating these platforms, not just for ourselves, but for our kids and for people around us to be educated about our culture. We need to be proud of our cultures. You know, I certainly remember when we're back when we were growing up, it was cool to be Jamaican and everyone wanted to be Jamaican. But as you got older now, everyone wants to be African. Everyone wants to know what cooking banana is, i.e. plantain or plantain, wherever you come from.
So... It's plantain. My wife would say plantain. My wife's Jamaican, so she would say plantain. But we always have that running joke. But as far as my daughter is concerned, it's plantain.
Plantain. Okay, thank you very much for coming in.
It's a pleasure, man.
Where can people connect with you online?
We've got Okezie Morrow on Instagram. Of course, we have Tata Storytime on Instagram. Well, I'm on Twitter, but it's not many people on Twitter these days. But anyway, but I'm on there. Okeziemorro. You can holler at me or Tata Storytime, TATA Storytime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You know, hit us up. Let us know. Watch the show. Enjoy the kids. And if you're cooking good jollof, invite me around.
Umar, where can we find you, sir?
I'm on all the socials at Umar Kankir on Twitter, at the Kank 007 on Insta, Umar Kankir on LinkedIn and Facebook.
What about you, Stephen?
Mind Bubbles Project on Instagram. I have a website, Mind Bubbles Project. Twitter, Mind Bubbles Project as well.
Amazing. Look, you've been listening to Dope Black Dads. And, you know, some people on our podcast will rate us the fifth best podcast to listen to. But others rate us, like GQ Magazine, will rate us as the fourth best podcast in the country to listen to. So, thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Gentlemen, fathers, my fellow Dope Black Dads, thank you very much for joining us, and we will catch you on the next.
Blessings.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Countdown to Christmas. It's the most wonderful time of the year, and nothing's going to stop us making the most of every festive moment. Our gift cards can be used in all Tesco stores nationwide, on all groceries, F&F clothing, and Tesco Mobile. And we're offering great discounts on bulk orders for organisations this Christmas. To find out more, visit tescoforbusiness.com and call our team today. For a limited time only. Terms and conditions apply. Tesco. Every little helps.
That's Mrs. Byrne. She just got her entire M&S shop for free. She's this week's randomly selected Sparks customer who doesn't need to pay for a thing. Not only that, every time she shops at M&S and scans her digital Sparks card, M&S donates to her chosen Sparks charity. Plus, she gets personalised offers and treats. Sparks, the new reward scheme from M&S. Good things happen every time you shop. Join today in the M&S app. Terms, conditions and exclusions apply. For details, see marksandspencer.ie.